You're listening to the White Hot Magazine of Contemporary Art podcast. Visit us online at whitehotmagazine.com. The best art in the world since 2005.
The downfall of an American hero, the defeat of a president, the sick world of Las Vegas, and the violent anarchy of the Hell's Angels. Part of a chronicle of the death of the American dream, created by journalist Hunter Thompson. Tonight's omnibus makes a valiant attempt to follow Thompson and English artist Ralph Steadman on a wild trip across America.
Day one. The English artist Ralph Steadman sets off with a BBC film crew for Aspen, Colorado, to meet an old friend. None of us knows what's going to happen.
Throughout the flight, this is our good old summertime flight where we're offering nickel beer and lemonade. Your crew for today is Captain Barr Bentler and First Officer Kloffenstein. Hope you have a pleasant flight. Thank you.
This must be 4 years now.
Nearly five. I don't know what the man has done since then. He may have terrible brain damage, you know. When I meet him, he may not even recognize me. Imagine that. He sometimes goes for people. He has these mace guns and CO2 fire extinguishers, which he usually just aims at people. But you see, he has this amazing power in Aspen. The police just go with him because they're so scared of him. He's a little older. And perhaps, how can I say, is a real word that would express, you see, his weirdness is probably toned down a little to the point where he might think before he does something. We might just be safe on this journey. I don't know.
On behalf of Rocky Mountain Airways and your flight crew, we'd like to thank you for flying with us today. Have a pleasant stay in Aspen or wherever your final destination might be.
Oh, God, what is he?
Hunter, it's me! What? Point to go?
Where?
Two-winged point.
No, never. Yeah. Never one around here.
What's it?
Can't be the one.
Yeah. Come on.
Come on, hey, wait a minute, hey!
Dr. Hunter Thompson and Ralph Steadman have worked together on articles in Rolling Stone magazine. Hunter's adventures as a journalist have elevated him to a kind of cult hero. His articles are obsessed with a vision of America gone rotten. The phrase fear and loathing appears in nearly all his titles, an indication of the violence and paranoia that marks his work and has become associated with his personality. His reputation gives him access to just about every major figure in politics, show business, and sport. Hunter's influence as a political commentator is recognized by all leading politicians, and his support for President Carter's election platform is credited with swaying young American voters in Carter's favor. Yet this man is an ex-Hell's Angel, whose work is marked by a celebration of violence, drug-taking, and personal risk. In 1970, he stood for political office as sheriff of his hometown of Aspen, Colorado. He called himself Freak Power Candidate and was only narrowly defeated.
I think I, unfortunately, proved what I set out to prove. And I think the original reason was to prove it to myself. That the American dream really is And I think that...
Yeah, you're right.
Well, I didn't believe it until now, and I'm not sure that this is really the proof of it. It's very hard to, you know, to have a bald-headed lunatic. I'll do that for the cameras.
All right!
I've already made up my mind, as a matter of fact. This is my last trip in politics. Or this kind of politics. I assure you I'll be in other kind of politics. I'm not sure which way I'll go, but it'll be one or the other. It won't be down this middle anymore.
If Hunter's political career had come to an abrupt end, he was already famous for the wildly inventive style of his writing. It began in 1970 when he was sent as a sports correspondent to cover the Kentucky Derby. He became much more interested in observing the characters and the events surrounding the race and the process of getting the story than in the story itself.
Unlike most of the others in the press box, we didn't give a hoot in hell what was happening on the track. We had come to watch the real beasts perform. I pointed to the huge grassy meadow enclosed by the track. That whole thing, I said, will be jammed with people, 50,000 or so, and most of them staggering drunk. It's a fantastic scene. Thousands of people fainting, crying, copulating, trampling each other, and fighting with broken whiskey bottles.
This highly personal form of journalism became known as gonzo, and his illustrator, Ralph Steadman, had to respond to it.
I think what he saw in this Our Connection was somebody that somehow saw the things in pictures as he saw it in words, you know. And that seemed to me to be part of the whole chemistry of it, that our chemistry there made gonzo possible.
I'm Edward.
He has a bird called Edward, such a marvellous character, which I think Hunter tormented it, but I think there was a kind of a two-way affection. There's something going on, you know.
Edward, talk to me. No.
Hunter would use it, I think, to bounce off, you know. We'd use it as a kind of a victim, you know, something to bring into the story and the way he was, how he was feeling about it, who was the bird. And I suppose that at some point I, in a way, became the bird, you know.
Now we're going to talk, Edward. Speak to me, yes.
I feel like Edward sometimes in a situation. I feel absolutely taken apart, as though he's had a whole session of talking to me, holding me like a bird. I'm trying to bite my way out of it, get the hell out of this thing.
Speak up, Edward. Speak. Speak up. Talk to me.
Are you trying to instigate a problem or something?
No, I just wonder.
If you are, I'd ask.
Obviously, I have a problem, right? I mean, why are you here?
Okay, why don't you do us all a favor? Instead of antagonizing the situation, why don't you just leave?
Okay, shucks. Okay. You on the streets, right?
From the book Hell's Angels,
the flames lit up the street just about the time the National Guard arrived on the scene with fixed bayonets and rifle butts swinging. The mob scattered, many of them blinded by tear gas bombs. The police were pelted with firecrackers, rocks, and beer cans, but they were wearing helmets, and their 6 weeks of training served them well.
What's that?
The menace is loose again. The Hell's Angels, the 100-carat headline, running fast and loud on the freeway, jamming crazy through traffic and 90 miles an hour down the center stripe, missing by inches, like Genghis Khan on an iron horse, with Sodom 500 miles to the south in the vast mad bowl of Los Angeles, home turf of the Satan's slaves, with their taste for the flesh of young dogs and tender young blondes with lobotomy eyes.
Obviously, one of the things I have to appreciate about America. If I didn't, I'd be stupid or insane, is that for good or ill, I can function here. And I don't think that there are many societies or social political systems where I could function the way I am now. And perhaps a lot of people would think it's much better. You know, that's the best argument for destroying the system, that it gets rid of people like me.
Editor's note. Due to circumstances beyond our control, the following section was lashed together at the last moment from a 6-pound bundle of documents, notebooks, and recordings. Dr. Thompson's plan, he says, is to create an entirely new form of journalism. In the meantime, we have suspended his monthly retainer and canceled his credit card. During 1 4-day period in Washington, he destroyed 2 cars, cracked a wall in the Hilton, purchased 2 French horns at $1,100 each, and ran through a plate glass door in a Turkish restaurant.
Most people are surprised that I walk on 2 legs. And the idea that I would have a wife or a child, or I think I said this, even a mother, that seems to surprise me. I think people think I'm very much maybe a violent version of that comic strip.
I am living a normal life. You know, I own a ranch in Colorado, and I have a wife and a child, and peacocks and Dobermans.
Day two, Owl Farm Aspen. No sign of Hunter all morning. When he finally appears, we approach him with caution, and he clearly has his doubts about us.
I don't see how you could possibly make a true film. Just because by bringing all this machinery in, you create a situation that's unnatural anyway. It's not you, it's I think one of the problems with film. I don't understand film that well. That's one of the reasons I want to learn about film. I think the technology is not up to the level where we have to get in order to portray reality. The technology warps reality, the portrayal. Film interests me. I'd like to play with it.
Nice. Different, eh? Go ahead. Cock it. Beautiful trigger.
Oh! Beautiful. I mean, you should at least know what the hell handguns are all about.
It's frightening, that.
I'm going to try to get the target, too. Let's see. Aim at the dirt over there. Hang on, I know you got to get going. All right.
Oh!
That'll kill a bear at 200 yards.
I won't believe it.
Yeah.
Hunter's violent public image is largely the result of a fictional character he himself created. Hunter called him Raoul Duke, a sort of drug-crazed journalist sent to Las Vegas in search of the American dream. The book Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, A Savage Journey to the Heart of the American Dream, was Hunter's vision of an America gone rotten, as seen through the eyes of Raoul Duke.
I think it's about time to get into the ether and the cocaine. My attorney was now fumbling with a salt shaker containing the cocaine, opening it, spilling it, then screaming and grabbing at the air as our fine white dust blew up and out across the desert highway. Oh, Jesus, he moaned. Did you see what God just did to us? God didn't do that, I shouted. You did it. You're a narcotics agent. You better be careful, he said. And suddenly he was waving a Black Point .357 Magnum at me, one of those snub-nosed Colt Pythons with a bevel cylinder. Plenty of vultures out here, he said. They'll pick your bones clean before morning.
I've been using Duke for 10 years, maybe more. I began to use him originally as he was a vehicle for quotations that nobody else would say. That was me really talking. Those were my quotes.
The only way to prepare for a trip like this was to dress up like human peacocks, get crazy, screech off across the desert and cover the story. But what was the story? Nobody had bothered to say. So we would have to drum it up on our own. Free enterprise. The American dream. Do it now. Pure gonzo journalism.
I think I've taken that form as far as I can take it. I found that I'm starting to repeat myself anyway. And it's not as much fun anymore. It's hard for me to work on a story now. I become part of the story. The first time I went to a press conference with Jimmy Carter, I had to sign more autographs than Carter signed. And the Secret Service had no idea who I was. They thought I was an astronaut. I used to be able to stand in the back, you know, and observe stories and absorb them. I can't do that. Now, the minute I appear in a story, then I become part of it.
Yes, they're making a film of him now, actually. Universal Pictures are, well, at least there's talk of it. They've made a script and they've sold the idea of this crazy person who rips through American politics. And
so at the same time, I collected
Hollywood will be the last resting place of the old Hunter Thompson. Hollywood, the city built on myths and fantasies, the ideal place to bury his old image. He has a date there anyway in 2 days' time to meet the scriptwriter from Universal Pictures, who's going to turn him into a fictional character in a multi-million dollar epic. The trip could be a chance to exorcise the past, as Hunter and Ralph travel to Hollywood via Las Vegas. In the books, Raoul Duke's adventures are financed with stolen credit cards, or by the simple expedient of skipping without paying the bill. This time, Hunter and Ralph are traveling on BBC expenses.
I had a word with Nadia today about the $60 a day limit.
You could get more than that.
Yes.
Like $160.
Yeah.
But who might like that?
If you can supply a reasonable reason why you should go over $60 a day.
I'm not talking about going over, I'm talking about getting $60 a day.
BBC, in fact, the biggest rip-offs, they're marvelous at it. They're exceptionally good because they tell people what the terms are. And it's take it or leave it. So if it's take it or leave it, it has to be a rip-off, doesn't it?
We were somewhere around Barstow on the edge of the desert when the drugs began to take hold. I remember saying something like, I feel a bit lightheaded, maybe you should drive. And suddenly, there was a terrible roar all around us. And the sky was full of what looked like huge bats, all swooping, screeching, and diving around the car, which was going about 100 miles an hour with the top down to Las Vegas. And a voice was screaming, Holy Jesus, what are these goddamned animals? Then it was quiet again. My attorney had taken his shirt off and was pouring beer onto his chest to facilitate the tanning process. What the hell are you yelling about, he muttered, staring up at the sun with his eyes closed and covered with wraparound Spanish sunglasses. Never mind, I said, it's your turn to drive. I hit the brakes and aimed the great red shark toward the shoulder of the highway. No point mentioning those bats, I thought. The poor bastard will see them soon enough.
I'd like to ask you why you use drugs.
Different drugs for different things. Right now, I think it's in my interest, in ours, perhaps. Maybe in the interest of the greater good for me to smoke a joint and calm down. It's been demonstrably proven that temper tantrums are not the best way to do interviews, and that probably my life will be easier and yours too if I smoke a joint. Now, if I were to sit here in a fit of anger and you saw me eating acid, if I were you, I'd leave with all the equipment. That cranks it up even, you know, even worse.
The important thing in Hunter's life actually is seeing this that great country, you know, that amazing sort of rolling place, go down the drain. The drugs play a part in it. It's only another way of twisting the mental image, if you like. You know, I don't know, maybe he actually needed something maybe to speed himself up to keep it going. Just, I mean, in a way, it's a kind of a dedication, just in order to see what he wants to see.
What are we marking?
I'm 6 o'clock.
Oh, no, God. Help us, Jesus. Why does this happen at the end? Oh.
I think going to Las Vegas is going to be a rather strange feeling for him because he's going to feel a little apprehensive about going back to something that perhaps he might want to forget. Well, Las Vegas does represent about the ultimate in what you can do if you've got endless amounts of money and or if you haven't and you can go there and win it. It's the sort of pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Strange memories on this nervous night in Las Vegas. 5 years later? Six? It seems like a lifetime, or at least a main era. The kind of peak that never comes again. History is hard to know because of all the hired bullshit. But even without being sure of history, it seems entirely reasonable to think that every now and then, the energy of an entire generation comes to a head in a long, fine flash. For reasons that nobody really understands at the time. and which never explain in retrospect what actually happened. You could strike sparks anywhere. There was a fantastic universal sense that whatever we were doing was right, that we were winning. We had all the momentum. We were riding the crest of a high and beautiful wave. So now, less than 5 years later, you can go up on a steep hill in Las Vegas and look west. And with the right kind of eyes, you can almost see the high watermark. That place where the wave finally broke and rolled back.
Tonight, I again proudly accept that nomination for President of the United States. But I have news for you. This time there's a difference. This time we're going to win.
Richard Nixon represents the dark side of the American dream. Richard Nixon stands to me for everything that I would not want to have happen to myself or be around. He stands for everything that I not only have contempt for, but dislike and think should be stomped out. Greed, treachery, stupidity, cupidity, positive power of lying, total contempt for any sort of human, constructive, political instinct. Everything that's wrong with America, everything that this country has demonstrated as a national trait, that the role defines repugnant, the bully instinct, the power grab, the dumbness, the insensitivity. Nixon represents everything that's wrong with this country. I mean, down the line, he can't even walk. He walks around with this kind of, how are you? I'm Richard Nixon.
From the article, Fear and Loathing at the Watergate.
Richard M. Nixon, ace track star for Whittier College, held his first press conference today since gangrene had forced doctors to amputate his leg some 5 weeks ago. Expectedly, the first question to Mr. Nixon was, would the loss of a leg in any way impair him from breaking the 3-minute mile as he has claimed he would 4 years ago? In answer to your question, let me say this. Sure, it's tough. The fact that I have only one leg has made it tough on us all. Believe me, no one knows better than me just how hard it has been. But I was elected to this team to break the world record for the 3-minute mile. And this constant obsession of the press with this missing leg business has prevented me from pushing forward with my program. But you've only got one leg, screams Don Rather of CBS. I know that. But let me say this to you.
What's the matter? What is the matter with you? Come on. Open the door.
Day 3, Las Vegas, 12 o'clock noon. We should have left for Hollywood at 9, but Thompson has locked himself in his hotel room. When he finally lets us in, his face is covered in white makeup.
Are you sure you're going to be okay?
I don't know.
Hey, you look terrible. Hey, sit down, something, and anything, but just
I'm
please.
I'm on the phone.
Oh, yeah? Oh. You're just well enough to do that. Well, that's good.
Yes.
Can you, I've
been vomiting blood this morning.
What?
Home. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can speak to Ralph for a second here. Yeah. Tell Sandy just exactly what's been happening.
Just, playing around, but he's obviously not. He's just...
I don't recognize anyone anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was in no mood or condition to spend another week in Las Vegas. Not now.
Yeah, no,
I had pushed my luck about as far as it was going to carry me in this town. All the way out to the edge. And now the weasels were closing in. I could smell the ugly brutes. Yes, it was definitely time to leave. My margin had shrunk to nothing.
It should have just disappearing. Mm. Caught back there. Cops behind us anywhere?
No.
The guy behind me is looking at me in a very ugly way.
I feel that, this idea of possibly going to Hollywood, another dream factory, where you can do anything and die on film, and by so doing, possibly have reincarnation, would fascinate Hunter very much, because it's an outrageous idea to go and arrange your own burial.
That's another piece of shit.
That's come on, you pigs.
I can't get over here. 150 fucking cars. Some asshole in a glass truck. Look at this junk. There's no holes over here. Man, this is a big cocksucker. People wonder why I don't buy American cars. God damn. Listen to that piece of shit. We're never gonna get to all. We won't get to. We won't make it. Keep it on the top a little bit. See if he swings right around.
Is that right down there?
Right back here. The man that's pulled off in front of us and might circle around.
I am.
That's the old Rommel tank trap tactic. Get ahead, then you come in behind them. And he knows I've seen him and he's seen me. Because they really play with you out here.
Do they?
Oh, it's cat and mouse, yeah.
They just want a game, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
He's signaling something. He's right behind me. I'm going to violate the speed limit now just to test it a little bit. I go 75, 80.
What's the speed limit?
70. No, oh my God, it's 55. Holy shit. Well, no wonder he's following us.
We're
going 85.
I think it's 20. Yeah, he's off on us now.
Yeah, he is. Maybe you can shake those one and really run amok. Come over, I'm gonna kill somebody in front. You're too small. I wanna kill somebody larger than you. Oh, stay back, you one.
Oh, what?
He's turning off, he's going back.
Oh, is he? Oh, dear.
You son of a bitch, you wanted him to come up on us, didn't you, you bastard?
Boy, it's sure good to be in Hollywood, Ralph. It's been a long time since we've been here really, where we really belong.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What do you think of this place?
It's the place to get out of as fast as possible.
You realize that your move is going to open here?
I won't be here for it.
But your name's going to be on it.
Well, if I'd like to see it, it'll be all right. I hope it makes money, but I don't want to... Hey, we're drawing a crowd again.
Why are you hiding here?
Look at this. You've drawn a crowd. That's why I'm hiding. But everywhere you go, you draw a crowd.
Do you know any of the names of these?
I haven't seen a name. I don't want to see any names. It looks to me like a dirty sidewalk. I'd like to get out of here.
That's a popcorn.
No, thank you. I hate popcorn. You just had to figure out what you're going to do. I refuse to go out there in this thing until you know what you're doing.
I just want you to... It seems to me that this is sort of the heartland of Hollywood.
That's why I've avoided it for 50 years.
But it seems to me this is a really appropriate place.
We're drawing a crowd. It looks like India. If I sit down here, God damn it, I'll be out of here in 13 more seconds if this keeps up. We may as well go to Bangladesh. Look at this. We've drawn a crowd for nothing at all. Aim at somebody else, Philip.
Yeah. Day 4, Hollywood. The Sunset Marquee Hotel. The appointment with a scriptwriter from Universal Pictures.
Basically, the story's about two people, one Hunter Thompson, Raoul Duke, the other Hunter's alter ego, begins with this character, the journalist character, getting beat up by the Hell's Angels, and it ends, the last 3 minutes of the movie ends on a campaign trail, either like 1980 or 1978 or not, or already won a campaign trail that has, well, it's going to be a fictional campaign trail, but has Ralph ever flipped out around you? Has he ever, like, expressed his anxiety to a point where it just exploded?
Oh, yeah, he's tried to kill me. He has deep hatred for me somewhere down in his soul.
But it usually comes out like the drawings, just like that at sudden moments, you know. Otherwise, perfectly passive as though there's nothing wrong. I'm prepared to put up with any kind of insult, so he might...
Ralph is essentially greedy. He wants money.
See, that act, that can be actively done on film. It'd be interesting, a guy that, like... who just is overwhelmed by this kind of craziness and just acts it out real quick in a drawing.
I
hate his drawing.
Yeah. He always seems to be embarrassed by them. I can't understand why.
I've been embarrassed from the very start.
Get
an assignment, though.
See, I'm so reluctant to go under this whole circus. You know, the idea of going anywhere with Hunter is horrible. And I'm always trying to hide, you know, get away, hide in the toilet. But he always finds me. I'm trying to express that to you, that I am extremely dull, and somehow I got involved in this thing, and somewhere in me there's a little cubicle that lets out these drawings occasionally. That's all.
Right.
The rest of them is intensely dull. I mean,
yeah, you can tell how retiring Ralph is by the kind of work he does. Brings in money.
Right.
It's interesting to see what happens to a person when he suddenly realizes that being crazy can pay.
It's got to be so done if people want to leave the cinema, I think.
Just doled out the BBC. I think it's more fun to fictionally create it based on the reality. The reality is pretty simple, you know, which you've expressed, the idea that you remain like a passive passenger up to a point until you're paranoid.
Now, when individuals read the entire transcript of the 21st meeting or hear the entire tape where we discussed all these options, they may reach different interpretations. But I know what I meant, and I know also what I did.
I had no advance knowledge that the president was going to indicate that I had investigated the matter and found no complicity on the part of anyone at the White House.
From fear and loathing at the Watergate,
Dean radiates a certain very narrow kind of authority. Nothing personal, but the kind of nasal, blank-hearted authority you feel in the presence of the taxman or a very polite FBI agent. Dean is clearly a shrewd executive. He will have no trouble getting a good job when he gets out of prison.
How can this be?
How is Charles Manson or maybe someone like John Dean or... You never know who comes to see you in the Sunset Marquee. Oh, John Dean, how are you? I'll be down. I knew you were coming somehow. I had a feeling you'd be here.
We're
down
right here.
We're performing. I'll have to cut this out. See, here's a wise man. Now he brought his own tape recorder. I remember sitting on my porch. Was it summer of 74 when you were testifying? Was that it?
That was the summer of 73. June of 73.
Yeah, 74 when the time of the Great Confusion.
Right.
But I remember sitting out there with it. I wanted to sit in the sun, and I brought my TV set out and put it on a big log stump. And I was, like everybody else, waiting for you to come on. You know, it was like the 17th inning, and then you wait. And I honestly didn't believe you could pull it off. I admired it tremendously. I might be confused, but it struck me that you had very little room to walk on that wire.
I don't recall much feeling of any room at all.
Yeah.
That it was just...
If it was light at the end of that tunnel,
one thing, I couldn't over-testify, and I couldn't under-testify.
Yeah. You had to be believed at the same time, totally.
Well, I had one thing going for me. I was telling the truth.
Well, but no one knew that. I wasn't sure of that.
No.
I was... you had a lot of people on your side. It was like the ultimate underdog thing.
Well, you know, I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know anybody was out there on my side when I was testifying.
Well, I thought it was just started testifying.
It wasn't until I knew my wife was behind me, and my lawyer by then came to believe me. He had doubts and questions along the way, but by the time I testified, I thought, well, I know at least two people are in my corner, and I didn't really know anybody else was there at all.
Well, it wasn't until you started, but then the weight of the thing came down.
One day of reading the totality of that. 8 hours of straight reading to...
What would happen to you if you hadn't been believed?
I thought there was a likelihood that, say, Nixon, Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, in other words, the top men of that presidency, would all testify against me, and it would be my word against theirs, and that would mean about 186 counts of perjury against me. And until the tapes came out that verified my testimony, it was very lonely. I was hanging just like that on that wire. after they the tapes were found.
And you're talking about Nixon's version or the...
Well, that's what happened. You know, he released his version, yeah. which came close to my testimony, but nevertheless always had that gap about any any problem.
That was one of the
himself.
Damnest documents I ever saw. I still have that's a classic.
That's right. So I was hanging out there by my thumbs.
What would have happened though if you hadn't been believed? I don't know. I'm not sure why I believed you right away, but I was I think after that, like 2 hours of the first day,
I suspect
things began to tip seriously. I mean, people began to believe you. I'm not sure why I did.
I suspect that I might have spent a lot longer time in prison.
What would happen with Nixon?
He'd have walked away. Let me tell you something that absolutely blew my mind the other day. A reporter said, "How do you think Americans would vote today, knowing what they know about Richard Nixon, if he ran against George McGovern?" And you know the vote was almost identical to what it once was?
Well, who did this poll?
It was a national poll.
That sounds insane to me.
The 37th President of the United States, Honorable Richard M. Nixon.
Hunter's nightmare of a revitalized Nixon coming back into public life is confirmed by a network news item. Nixon comes out of retirement in San Clemente to open a sports center named after him in Kentucky. The standing ovation he receives from an uncritical public confirms Hunter's worst fears that the lessons of Watergate have already been forgotten. Acting in the spirit of Gonzo, he decides to launch the Re-elect Nixon in 1980 campaign with the idea of provoking some kind of public reaction. He calls in two friends, both actors, to help stage the inaugural rally.
This man got a raw deal. This guy got a raw deal. Tonight we're going to ask him to pardon us.
Ask Nixon to pardon us. Ask Nixon to pardon us. Ask Nixon to pardon us.
Ask Nixon to pardon us. Ask Nixon to pardon us. Now more than ever.
The meeting in Beverly Hills isn't a runaway success. There's a total attendance of three.
Four other years.
You don't forgive Richard Nixon?
I when I came here, I'll be honest, I didn't forgive him.
And why have you changed your mind?
Your speech, the excitement tonight, everything surrounding my mind is being changed tonight.
I think we're having an impact. Come on, we're having some impact here.
But do you feel one guy shooting it in the right direction against something as big as Nixon, as big as the state, can actually achieve it?
I think so. I think so, but I have to think so. You know, that's... If I didn't think so, I'd be dumb. You know, I'd have to look at myself in the mirror and think, wait a minute. If it's, if this is all totally useless, then why are you doing it? I could get rich. There are a lot of things I could do. I was a good criminal at one point, and probably still am in some ways. But no, I have to think that a person can do something good, but I'm not sure how you'd... Maybe I might even be... I might be just doing myself good in some way. I don't know.
The third president, Thomas Jefferson, had a vision of America. He believed that this whole new country, this giant, unformed continent, offered the chance to start again. The premise was very simple, that human beings acting in a sense of enlightened self-interest are smart enough to do the right thing and know the truth. America could have been a fantastic monument to all the best instincts of the human race. Instead, we just moved in here and destroyed the place from coast to coast like killer snails. Everybody wants power over a country that has had its day. I think we're finished. The final day in Hollywood, and our final attempt to uncover the real Hunter Thompson.
If you're going to be a famous American writer, you don't really think of being in the comic strips, you know, being, or doing things like that, yes, in front of the camera, and it will be on film, won't it? The way
the water is without chlorophyll, and the whiskey kills the what the, would be the chlorophyll substitute. So every time we make a drink here, we put the ice, I mean the drink in the ice, and then the whole thing into the grass, giving the ice enough time to absorb the chlorophyll. I have now absorbed enough chlorophyll to get back to the drink. That's why I'm so healthy, folks. I always roll my ice in chlorophyll before I drink whiskey. All right, what were you saying?
I was asking you whether there's this pressure to live up to the image that you've created.
Well, it certainly is. You've been putting it on me all week. Well, how much pressure do you think I... What would you, how would you define pressure? Being taken to Las Vegas and put in front of cameras. And, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure at all if you're what you think you're shooting. Whether you're whether this thing... Excuse me, every once in a while, I forget who I'm talking to. But I have no idea whether you think you're taking or making a film about Duke or Thompson. I haven't thought about it until now. And I'm filling with hate and rage right now just thinking about it. Go ahead. That's you.
You passing it over to me again?
Well, I mean, I want to drink some chlorophyll.
So what... Oh,
no, I think that's a serious point. I'm never sure which one people expect me to be. And very often, they conflict. Most often, as a matter of fact, with people I don't know, I'm expected to be Duke more than Thompson.
Sure, because, I mean, I come to you only knowing you from your books and from your writing. But speaking very personally...
That's a very profoundly personal commentary on your perception. I'd flee after seeing anything like that. Jesus. Foreigners.
Speaking very personally, it's
I wouldn't risk that again.
I actually find that you match pretty accurately up to the character that you've created in your books. I actually...
That's twice. In 2 minutes. Okay, well, I mean, I have nothing to do with the hiring policies of the BBC.
We're just about to run out of film, I think.
You're out again? God damn it. I've never seen such lame equipment. You know, I own a ranch in Colorado, and I have a wife and a child, and peacocks and Dobermans, and it seems... I am living a normal life. Meanwhile, this right alongside me, this myth is growing and mushrooming and getting more and more warped, And like when I go out to, when I get invited to speak at, say, universities, I'm not sure if you're inviting Duke or Thompson. So I'm not sure who to be.
I suppose that my plans are to figure out some new identity. You know, I have to kill off one life and start another one.
Two basic types, protective and non-protective. Protective caskets are designed to be completely resistant to the entrance of air and water. They are constructed from steel, copper, or bronze, metals which provide for a long interment life.
Well, it seems we're here today, I don't know, to discuss the sort of some kind of idea for a monument.
I think we want to get an estimate and...
That sort of thing. What sort of thing would cost? I show you this is a basic idea, but actually Hunter hasn't approved it yet. It's just a thought. Yeah, let me over. He lives in Aspen, in Colorado.
That is different.
Yeah. Well, that's like a giant eagle's bird bath, you know, in a way.
We also want to look at as the fact that this rim of mountains is a giant valley 20 miles across.
Is this property that you own now?
Yeah.
You see the top of the red cliffs back there? The edge. Well, the property goes back over the cliffs. I can do whatever. If I wanted to build a McDonald's, I could do it back then.
Hunter prefers a little simpler, maybe even like this, but not with wings. You know, with the fist on top, but more of a Teutonic.
What I'm trying to do is get some estimate of the cost of this thing and whether it's feasible or not.
I did this merely to give Hunter something to bounce off and say no or something. You know Albert Speer?
No, Simplicity.
Albert Speer, the kind of the architect.
Yeah, Albert Speer, sort of.
Yeah, I've heard him, but I didn't say that. I know him.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be a pile of rocks about 100 feet tall, and then a giant chrome sort of a cylinder, more like a, but in a conical sort of round and tapering down to the top, at 150 feet tall, hollow inside, with on top of the sort of big arm, it'd be a fist with a double thumb, you know, the symbol.
I told you 1,000 times for 10 years, you've got to put 2 thumbs in the fist.
You put the other thumb. Come on.
I'll put it on there, because it's going to be on there in the end.
A twisted thumb.
Well, I mean, it's better than no thumb, which is what you said. I can't count on my friends, you see.
No, that's the problem.
I've all my life I've made irresponsible.
Mm-hmm. Is this something that that you would want to do in the near future?
It's written well. Sure.
I mean, you're talking about something that maybe you want to do after you die, is what you're saying.
Oh yes, it's in the will. You know, it's all described. It's going to be a little hard to do, particularly with me gone. But that could be a nice monument. After the cremation, we put the ashes in a canister and shoot it out the top of the fist over the valley, and up gets up about, say, 500 feet up, explodes, and the ashes drift down all over here. And that's it. That's my funeral.
That I do know about. We place ashes in different areas.
Do you actually spread it over the seven seas?
Yes, we do. Quite a bit of that.
Mm. Oh, you do that too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we fly them out in an airplane. I happen to be a pilot.
Flying funerals.
And sometimes we have the families meet in a particular place, and we'll fly over in circle and then fly out to see.
I'm a firm believer in the ashes to ashes and dust to dust concept.
What you do is basically for those that are still living, you know, in a sense. Have you thought about it in that way?
That's what I'm trying to do.
That's
what I'm trying to take it seriously.
Otherwise, people that are related to you, your wife and whoever, is what sometimes whatever is done when someone dies, and that maybe that should be taken in consideration, and probably it already has when you're thinking about.
Well, I'm just starting to get serious.
To
doctors again giving me like 6 months to live at swine, so this is every 2 years the doctor tells me I'm going to die. For all I know, I might somehow live for 10 more years.
Well, that's something none of us know how long we're going to live.
No, I provided for no ceremony except for one song. That's Mr. Tambourine Man.